Hello, welcome to the self-learning platform by Dr. Sushma Singh. Today we start Unit 10, a manual Kant. And we start with topic formulations of the categorical imperative. The a priori formal normative idea of the freedom or autonomy and equality of all moral agents, Kant argues, is the categorical imperative of pure practical reason, which he maintains can and should be used to assess or test the morality of our maxims of action. He gives several formulations of the categorical imperative, which in any of its formulations is, in his view, the supreme principle of pure practical reason or rational will. His three major formulations are presented below. The first formulation, universal law formulation, is made from the standpoint of the moral agent. It states, act only on that maxim which you can at the same time will that it should become a universal law. A variant of the first formulation, which can be referred to as the universal law of nature formulation, reads as follows. Act as if the maxim of your action were to become through your will a universal law of nature. The second formulation, and in itself formulation, is made from the standpoint of those who are affected by, or in other words, those who are the recipient of our actions. It reads, so act that you always treat humanity, whether in your own person or in the person of any other, always at the same time as an end, never merely as a means. The third formulation, kingdom of ends formulation, views the agents and their recipients as forming a moral community of self-legislating moral actors. It states, all maxim as proceeding from our own making of law ought to harmonize with the possible kingdom of ants as a kingdom of nature. The categorical imperative of practical reason, says Kant, is categorical in that it is not hypothetical or conditional to the particular wishes or inclinations of this or that moral agent or cultural community. For Kant, morality is not what produces good for ourselves or for others, but what has to be done as an absolute or categorical duty, a duty arising from the presuppositions or a priori, inherent or pre-given structures of our practical reason or rational will. To act morally, in other words, is to act out of a sense of duty, that is, out of respect for the moral law or the categorical imperative, and not out of considerations of self-interest. Instrumental rationality as taught by Hobbes, or the protection of any natural right to private property as taught by Locke. In this respect, Kant's moral and political philosophy marks a major departure from that of Hobbes and Locke. Next point is the universal law of right or justice. As the supreme principle of moral practical reason, the categorical imperative is, according to Kant, valid not only for our inner world of thoughts, convictions, motivations, etc., but also for our outer or external world of inner relationships with other human beings. The world of our external relations with other human beings is, however, a world of unavoidable space and time constraints on our freedom of action. For instance, we cannot all be at the same place or occupy the same piece of land at the same time. Accordingly, the categorically imperative of moral practical reason as applicable to our external realm of action contains a law or principle of right or justice for making my freedom of external action compatible with the everyone else's freedom of external action. Kant writes, right is the totality of conditions under which the will of one person can be unified with the will of another under a universal law of freedom. He formulates the universal principle of right or justice as follows. Every action is just that in itself or in its maxim is such that the freedom of the will of each coexist with the freedom of everyone in accordance with the universal law. He also gave a variant of the same law as act externally in such a way that the free use of your will is compatible with everyone according to a universal law. This universal law of right or justice is an juridical law, which, unlike an ethical law, which regulates our inner world of thoughts, motivations, etc., legitimizes in accordance with the categorical imperative the use of coercion for its implementations. He writes, my external and rightful freedom should be defined as a warrant to obey no external laws except those to which I have been able to give my own consent. Similarly, external and rightful equality within a state is that relationship among citizens whereby no one can put anyone else under a legal obligation without submitting simultaneously to a law which requires that he can himself be put under the same kind of obligation by the other person. Kant goes to the extent of saying that his universal principle of justice or right has a conjoint principle which regards as just the resort to universal reciprocal coercion with the freedom of others. The next point is property, social contract, and the state. As the universal law or principle of external freedom, right, or justice morally enables and regulates even through just or rightful coercion means the freedom of human beings in their external spatial relations with one another. According to Kant, this principle or law yields or is conjoint with a permissive law or juridical postulate of practical reason, which gives to everyone the right of property in any of the things of the world. In accordance with the universal law of right and justice. In Kant's view, all the non-human things of the world are at the disposal of humanity as a whole. Our freedom to own or use them can be restricted in the light of practical reasons of a priori formal universal law of right or justice to which all positive juridical laws must conform. Anyone who first occupies or possesses a piece of land, for instance, must be assumed to be doing so as part of humanity's external freedom. In accordance with practical reasons, a priori formal law of right. Since the first acquisition of land or things of the world affects the freedom of action of everyone else, its full moral jurisdiction cannot rest on a mere unilateral action. According to Kant, therefore, the moral legitimacy of any original appropriation of property remains provisional until it is ratified by a universal agreement of all who are affected by it. Only such a universal agreement of all who are affected by the original appropriations of property can fulfill the requirement of the universal principle of right and justice. It is towards the realization of the ideal requirement of universal right or justice that Kant offers his social contract conceptualization of the state and of a Pacific Union of States on a global level. He speaks of the state as a union of the multitude of men under laws of right, describing the social contract as an idea of reason rather than as an event, that is, as an amalgam of reasons categorically imperative. Kant's right, the act by which people forms itself into a state, is the original contract. Properly speaking, the original contract is only the idea of this act, in terms of which alone we can think of legitimacy of a state. In accordance with the original contract, everyone within people gives up his external freedom in order to take up again immediately as a member of the commonwealth, that is, of a people considered as a state. It is in fact merely an idea of reason which nonetheless has undoubted practical reality, for it can oblige every legislator to frame his laws in such a way that they could have been produced by the united will of the whole nation, and to regard each subject in so far as he can claim citizenship as if he had consented with the general will. The reason or motivation which Kant gives for the social contract is different from his reasons given by Hobbes and Locke. The motivations they give is rational self-interest and the fear of violent death, or the natural right to self-preservation and the protection of property rights. For Kant, the motivation for the contract is to secure a rational right to property, whereby the contractors could, with moral justification, exclude others from accession to which they only had a provisional right in the state of nature. He writes, from private right in the natural condition there now arises the postulate of public right. It, in relation to an unavoidable coexistence with others, you should make the transition from the state of nature to the juridical state, that is, one of distributive justice. Kant, unlike Hobbes or Locke, thinks of the institution of property as inseparable from the civil state. He writes, but the state of the legislative, universal, and the truly united will is the civil state. Therefore, something external can be originally acquired only in conformity with the idea of a civil state, that is, in reference to it and its realization, though before its reality, since otherwise the acquisition occurs only in the civil state. According to Hobbes, property rights are created by the sovereign state, which is assumed to be independent from property. For Locke, property rights in the state of nature are absolute. They are, so to say, independent from the state, which only has to guarantee and protect those natural rights. For Kant, there can be no absolute natural rights to property, just as there is no state that is independent from property. Our right to property, says Kant, can only be legitimate or just if it is in accordance with the universal principle of right or justice. Our property rights can therefore be only provisional until they are ratified both by a civil state and a peaceful confederation of nation or states of the world. Now we want to wind up this lecture and thank you so much for your attention.